Paige Albiniak, editorial director of Promax BDA, and this is the Daily Brief Podcast. You can subscribe to our show on iTunes, Google Play, and now on Spotify. You can also rate and review this podcast on the iTunes, and we encourage you to do so. Today, Programming Insider Editor-in-Chief Mark Berman is back to discuss his picks for top TV shows of the year, and I will chime in with mine. If you want to see Mark's list, it's up on Daily Brief at brief.promaxbda.org. Hello, Mark. Welcome back.
Hello, Paige. How are you?
I'm great. How are you?
I'm doing very well. We have a lot of good TV to talk about.
We do. And it's a week till Christmas, so.
Right. Amazing.
All right. So before we dive into this, I'm just going to offer a little disclaimer about myself, which is I am not a TV critic. I am a person who spends most of my working life writing, reading, listening, thinking about television. So in that sense, I feel like I have a good ability to discuss these shows, but I definitely don't watch as much TV as the average TV critic, and I don't think I watch as much as you, Mark. But what I don't know about Mark will fill in. So away we go.
I'm ready.
So Mark, let's start with we're gonna start with 10 and work our way up. So what's your number 10 pick?
My number 10 pick is Will and Grace. We talked about this in the last podcast.
At great
I'm
length.
I'm blown away. I'm just blown away by it. I honestly, you know, I kind of thought, well, why do I love this show so much when I couldn't stand it when it ended? I just think that it's funny. You know, this is kind of a tumultuous world we live in. We know these characters. We feel comfortable with them, and they're just playing funny. And the one thing I pointed out, which I think is very important, when the show started way back when, it was really a trendsetter. It started, you know, it featured two gay men, and that was really important about Will and Grace. At this point, that's not even a factor anymore. These are just, you know, and good for Will and Grace. I just love it. I love it.
Yeah. I think we talked about this at length in the Golden Globes podcast, but I think it's just been interesting to find out that the show actually had something new to say, that packaging what that is with these characters we already know has worked really well. And I think that it's all of this team, that the cast, the writers, the executive producers, they've just finally honed what it is they do. So in that sense, it's working incredibly well. It does make you wonder what will happen when Roseanne comes back. It makes you wonder what would happen. This will never happen, but if Friends came back, you know, these shows that had casts that worked together this closely for 10 years.
I'm curious, do you have, you know, not including Roseanne, do you have a sitcom that you'd like to see come back other than Will and Grace and Roseanne? Is there something on your bucket list that you're like, wow, that would be great if it came back?
No, because I've told you a million times I'm not a reboot person, but I think if, you know, Seinfeld did that little reunion on Curb, I think if they got the Friends cast back for a reunion, it would do huge ratings, like crazy huge.
Yeah. Oh, I'm sure it would.
So, I mean, I'm sure there are other ones that could work. And, you know, they brought back Gilmore for those four episodes. They brought back Fuller House. They've brought back One Day at a Time on Netflix, and that's on a lot of critics' top lists. So I feel like a lot of these reboots have worked.
They have, which means we're going to be seeing a lot more of them. But
yeah,
my pick, if I had to say what comedy would I love to see come back, it really is Roseanne. I watched that show religiously until they won the lottery, and I'm like, I'm out of here. But now that they apparently, that whole thing never happened, and Dan's still alive, John Goodman, I'm ready.
That's like Will and Grace never stopped being friends on Will and Grace, right?
That's right. And where are their kids? They don't exist. Okay.
Yeah, no kids.
Whatever.
Yeah. Just for balance, so my number 10 pick was This Is Us, and that will come up later on Mark's list, so we'll talk about it then. We'll talk about it then. I'll have things to say about This Is Us, but when we get to Mark put it. So Mark, number 9.
Number 9 was Feud, Betty and Joan on FX, and I have to tell you what I really, for me personally, I saw the first two episodes at the press tour last winter, and sitting in the room with us was Ryan Murphy. So there I am in this room, And it was, you know, it was just a really fun experience. And I watched it thinking, you know, I love these two actresses. I'm a big classic movie fan, and I thought it was a great idea to begin with. And when I saw the, you know, how the two actresses playing Susan Sarandon and Jessica Lange, I was blown away. I was blown away, and I was mesmerized every week. I think there were 8 episodes. I couldn't wait. Every Sunday I tuned in, and I wasn't disappointed. It was nostalgic. It was funny. It was dramatic. And it really, you know, it really, the sad reality of this show was, it really focuses on what happens to these two women when they're suddenly in their 50s and they're really not wanted anymore. And I think this is a universal problem in society. When you get to a certain age, I think in any profession, suddenly you're facing ageism. And I think that was the underlying theme of this show. I just loved it. I thought it was really, really well done. So kudos to FX again for another good show.
So this is a show, and I have a little list of this later, so we'll see if I still have things to say about it after we get through this top 10 list. But this is a show that I was really excited to watch. We posted tons of promos about it, and then it came on, and I never watched it. So this is on my list of shows that I need to go back and watch. But that list is long, so we'll see what I actually get to. If I did nothing but watch television for all of Christmas break, I would not even get close to getting through my list.
Oh, I'd love to watch it again. I mean, if I had the time, I'd sit through. There were certain scenes in the show that I just laughed out loud. I thought it was hilarious. But then there were scenes that were really sad to watch, you know, to see these women go through this. And but I just thought it was a great, great show. And what a blast to watch it with Ryan Murphy sitting in the room in the first 2 episodes.
I've heard he likes to sit in the audience when people premiere his stuff.
Oh, well, and the reaction was really overwhelmingly positive sitting in that room based on what I was hearing, you know. So I'm sure he walked away feeling pretty good. He's got another anthology hit on his hands.
So the next one in this one is Charles and Diana, right? That's what they had scheduled.
Is that the, yeah, I believe so. Yes. That which would be, you know, we've seen those two people in countless movies and this and that, but this is Ryan Murphy, and I bet he brings something different to the table. I'm going to watch it. I'm very anxious.
I probably said this before too, but OJ, American Crime Story, OJ versus the American People. I think it actually goes in reverse. People versus OJ Simpson, American Crime Story. In any case, when that came on, I thought, this is the dumbest thing I've ever heard of. Why do you need to retell this story? We all know this story. And then I watched that and was like, oh, this is amazing. So that was another one of those shows where I think it helps me when I don't have very high expectations, frankly. But that was another show where I just thought, this seems, I don't even know why you would do this. And it was so good. So.
Oh, it was I do have to say the one thing that bothered me about that show, which a lot of people wrote about, when they had the handful of scenes with the young Kardashians, you know, running around, I'm like, oh gosh, do we need to see this? But okay, Robert Kardashian was their father.
Oh, I like that.
And, you know, I just thought it was a little obnoxious, but okay. You know, he was their father and they were with him. So they had to have, you know, little Kardashians running around, which they did.
I thought it was a good callback or a reminder of this is where this family came from. This family that's so influential in pop culture now that this is where they started. And you probably don't even remember that that's who this was. So I thought that was it tied it back together.
Yeah.
All right. So my number 9 was Veep. And let me say about my own list too, it's limited to shows I watched. There were some shows like Will and Grace, for example. Everyone now knows I really enjoyed it. It didn't make my top 10 list just for various reasons. But and my list is mostly in the order by which I enjoyed them. So I wouldn't even say it was by necessarily quality. I almost feel like they're all probably of equal quality because they're all very high quality. But that's basically how I picked. But I picked Veep because when I was thinking about, obviously it won the Emmy. And then I was just thinking about comedies and what actually made me laugh. And there's not that many shows on that make me laugh. And Veep still makes me laugh out loud. And the writing is just, it's nothing. I don't know if there's anything on TV where the writing is as sharp as I think it is on Veep. And I also think that cast is still incredibly, you know, they're just a very tight cast. So that was why I picked Veep.
Well, Julia Louis-Dreyfus, I mean, she's won, I think, how many Emmys in a row? Six for that show?
I think so. Five or six, yeah.
And then she also won for Seinfeld, and she won for the new adventure.
She won for Christine. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I think eight Emmys, not too shabby, not too shabby, but it is ending next year, you know, one more season. Yeah. But
I think it's time.
I also agree it's a great show. I think so, yeah, probably. You don't want to, the nice thing is when a show knows when to kind of walk away without overstaying its welcome.
Yeah, we could do a whole podcast on shows that don't walk away.
Yes, totally. Right. There's a lot of them.
There's a lot of them, and most of them are on Showtime. Oh, sorry, Showtime. Okay, Mark, you're number eight.
My number eight is Stranger Things. You know what I love about this show? I watch this and feel like it just has that, you know, way back when, remember Gremlins, the Goonies, mm-hmm. particularly mm-hmm. the Goonies. Young kids solving, you know, there's mysteries, there's this. It just has such a nice nostalgic flavor. And I think what really stands out about this show, these kids are really good actors. They're, you know, sometimes you watch a show and you'll see a kid, it's like, oh God, stop looking at the kid. You know, these kids are natural and it's exciting and it just has that nostalgia feel. I love this show. And then, you know, the thing about it, which I wanted to point out, you know, I've always said I prefer not to binge watch. I like to watch an episode every week because it gives me something to look forward to.
Yeah.
There's something about this show that when it's on, it's like I have to watch the next episode and the next one. And then after 5 hours, it's like, okay, I have to get up and do something and I'll come back. It's a great show.
That's how I watch Stranger Things too. I binge watch it, and I'm not such a big binger either, but I binge watched the whole thing over a weekend. And I thought, for some reason, I thought there were only 7 episodes and there were 9. So I got to the end of 7, was like, well, that's obviously not the end. So I just sat through the next 2. So I think, for me, Stranger Things is all about the kids. I do love David Harbour. I think both David Harbour and Winona are great on that show, but it's the kids for me. And so then I went down this rabbit hole with the kids and Galen, Matt Terrazzo, and I'll look the other ones up, Caleb. But two of them are Broadway stars. So Galen Matt Terrazzo starred as Gavroche on Les Mis, and Caleb was in The Lion King. So it's, you know, and also Millie Bobby Brown, I don't know if you've ever heard her, but she can sing like an angel. So and there's a really cute YouTube video of them doing a Bruno Mars song right before the Emmys. I think it was last year. So I think that the kids, even though it seemed like they came out of nowhere, they were all really talented. We just didn't know them, you know, but it's not like they came from absolutely nowhere.
No, and they're just so refreshing to watch, and there's such an element of excitement, and it just takes me back to a different time. But it's just one of those shows that you just can't stop watching. And then when you get through it, you're like, I don't want it to end. I want more.
I know.
You know.
I think that is good storytelling. You know, where they tell, because it's like at the end of every episode, you think, well, what happens next? I have to stick around.
Exactly. And yeah, it's one of those shows. And it's another great show on Netflix. And I'm looking forward to, you know, look, I don't think this is a show that can run 6, 7, 8 years. I mean, the kids are going to get older and, you know, you don't want 18-year-old, you know, it's not going to work as well. But right now it's just got that refreshing, you know, innocent and exciting feel that I think can work for a couple more seasons.
So let me just say the kids' names correctly. So Gatton Matarazzo, he plays Dustin. He's the one that came off Broadway. Finn Wolfhard, he was in It this year too, which was a big movie hit. He plays Mike. Caleb McLaughlin plays Lucas. He was one that was in Lion King. And then I also thought this was a good year for Noah Schnapp, who plays Will. And he's the kid who, I mean, in season one, well, really both seasons, the story sort of centers around him. But in season one, he's off screen most of the time. So season two, he had to do a wide range of things. He had to be very physical. I thought he was very impressive in season two.
So did I. Everything about the show. And I love the fact that Winona Ryder's back. You know, look, she had a great, she, she had a great career. She was up and coming, and then we know what happened to her. And for years, she kind of disappeared. You're like, what happened to Winona? And it's nice to have her back. I think she's just good. And it's good to see her back. And, you know, it's exciting to see it win awards. And again, it's just another example of why an outlet like Netflix really stands out.
Yeah, I agree. There are, it just is one of the many offerings on Netflix that are so different. And Netflix, on my list of shows that I need to go back and watch, like a large majority of them are on Netflix. So my Stranger Things 2 was fourth on my list, actually, up high. And then my number 8 was Insecure on HBO. Did you watch that at all, Mark?
You know, I haven't seen, I've seen bits and pieces of it. I can't say that I've actually, you know, I'm really qualified to talk about it. I know it's on a lot of critics' top list, and it's on my bucket list to watch, but I really haven't sat down and seen that much of it, but I've seen a little of it.
So I think I found Insecure because it came on after Game of Thrones. So, and also it was paired with Veep. So I ended up watching it, and I just found it's a really, well, first of all the women in the show are hilarious. They have really funny relationships with each other. It definitely presents the world from this different point of view. And then I've mostly watched season two. I've watched a little of season one. I think season two seems much sharper and much more like Issa Rae found her voice in the show. Not that she didn't in season one, but by season two, I feel like they really knew what they were doing. So Insecure is a show that, if you haven't watched it, I recommend. It's kind of like a little bit like an African-American Sex in the City. It's set in LA, though, but it's definitely about girlfriends. That's the key part of that show. So I really enjoyed Insecure. Okay, so you're number 7.
My number 7 is a show that no one will have on their top 10 list. No one's going to have this. Because you look at the show and think, well, it's nonsense and, you know, idiotic and all those things. Impractical Jokers on True TV, I have to tell you, every time, which is every day basically, every time I watch it, I laugh my head off. These four guys, and I thought, what do these four guys remind me of? But they kind of remind me of the Three Stooges plus one, without the without, you know, hitting each other.
Do they bonk each other on the head? Or
well, they do. I mean, they do things. You know, the premise is that they have all these setups and, you know, one of them is doing something or two of them, the other two are telling them what to say. And it's the stupidest thing. And it's just so funny. And every time I sit and watch it, and my kids love that show. My two girls love it. So it's always on. Every time I walk in a room, it's on. And every time I sit down and watch it, it's hilarious. The only thing I worry about is, you know, look, it's on True TV. So it's not getting 10 million viewers. However, I recently went to Madison Square Garden. They had they have an Impractical Jokers tour. I mean, they filled up the entire Madison Square Garden, and people were like going nuts there. So, I mean, at some point, they're going to be recognized by everyone, you know, to do these things. But I just could watch this thing over and over again, and So to me, a show should be in the top 10. It doesn't have to be scripted. It doesn't have to have stellar production. As long as it does something for me that I truly enjoy. And this show makes me laugh more than any show has in since Isle of Lucy. Okay, so it's on the list.
No, I think that is how these top lists should be, though, because there's so much television. Even if you're, I mean, the critics are all saying it. We can't watch 500 plus shows. So it has to be sort of based on what you've seen and what you enjoy. I think that's totally valid. And I haven't watched Impractical Jokers as a show. I've seen many, many promos for it, and they are quite funny.
I'm telling you, sit down and watch an episode. You're going to it is just so stupid. It's hilarious. and it's embarrassing. And I mean, it's hilarious. I can't get enough of it.
I will say embarrassing is something that I generally don't like. That's what I didn't like about I Love Lucy when I was a kid, because I was always so embarrassed
really?
For her. Yeah, but I was little, you know, but I was always embarrassed for her. Why is she being such a fool? So, yeah, I struggle with that kind of humor, but I'm picky. Okay,
well, go ahead.
My number 7 was Halt and Catch Fire. Did you watch that at all, Mark?
Yes, I've seen that show. It's a great show. It's a good show.
So that show, was four seasons. This was its final season. It has this amazing cast. It's Lee Pace, Mackenzie Davis, Scoot McNairy, and Carrie. And I'm going to look it up really fast. But that show was always sort of critically loved, but did not catch fire as far as the ratings were concerned at all. But Carrie Bichet, yeah. So, but they did a good job, and Toby Huss too, I should also mention. That show, though, I mean, the cast, first of all, was incredible. So they could do quite a lot with the cast. The writing was always good. I think this final season, because you knew it was their last season, it was one of those series where they got to wrap it up. And I think, because, you know, a lot of times with series, they just get canceled and you kind of just get left hanging. So I felt like they got to tell the story they wanted to tell. And I also think there's just really nothing else like it on TV. It's like set in the 80s, it's set in the Silicon Valley tech boom, but, and you know, there's lots of period shows, but I don't feel like you've seen one set in the 80s like this one. So I think the key to the Halt and Catch Fire, though, is that cast, and they've all are breaking out in movies and stuff. So I think we really enjoyed that show.
You know what, also with that show, you know what, I have to give AMC a lot of credit, because you know, when you think of, you know, that cable network, you don't think necessarily of this show immediately. But, you know, AMC has had shows over the years that haven't been blockbusters in terms of the numbers or social media or anything else. But they stick with it and they leave it on for a certain number of seasons. And they give you an ending and you feel satisfied. So I give them credit.
Yeah, I think so. Halt and Catch Fire came, I believe, from some of the producers, creators of Breaking Bad. So that helped them get on the air. And then another show, this is not on my list or anything, but a show that I watched on AMC for a long time was Turn, which was about the American Revolution. And that was another one where, I mean, you never saw that show up on any list. And it wasn't like I loved it, but it was a very high quality show. The production was incredible. It was, you know, all set in like 1776. It had a great cast also. So I feel like those kinds of shows, those like really premium shows with tiny audiences, I mean, there's a lot of them now, but I don't know that networks like AMC are going to be able to be in that business as much. I think those kinds of shows will end up more on Amazon, Netflix, Hulu.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Great show.
All right. So let's go to your number six.
You know what? This is a real surprise that this is on my list, but you know, the Marvelous Mrs. Maisel, is that how you pronounce it?
It's Maisel. Last time we talked about it, I said Maisel the whole time, but it's Maisel.
Maisel. You know, I got Amazon a couple of weeks ago, sent me, or maybe a month ago, sent me DVDs of the show. And I
Amazon
thought to myself,
sent you
I really
DVDs?
Have...
I didn't even know people still did that.
Yes. I got a DVD of this, not the whole season. Couple of episodes, and I thought, you know what, this is a show that's really going to appeal to me. It's set in 1958. I wasn't around then, but I was around shortly after that, so I kind of remember that era, and I just thought the whole idea of it seemed really good, and I never got around to watching. And then the Golden Globe nominations came out, and I'm like, what? It's on. It's nominated for a couple of Golden Globes, so I'm like, I've got to watch this. Oh my God, I love this. I love this show. The lead actress, and I hope I'm pronouncing her name right, Rachel Brosnahan, I think that's how you pronounce it.
Yeah, that's right.
She's on fire on this show. She plays a woman who's like a typical homemaker back then. She lives in Riverside Drive, which is an affluent area of Manhattan. You know, her parents are in her building. She's got a husband. She's got, you know, what seems like a perfect life. She's like June Cleaver on Leave It to Beaver, and everything's perfect. Suddenly, the husband, you know, he's gone. You know, he's a stand-up comedian tonight, and inadvertently, you know, he leaves her, and she inadvertently realizes she's got this talent for stand-up comedy and goes on this, you know, suddenly her whole life has changed. She wants to be a stand-up comedian, and it's kind of like this is when Joan Rivers was up and coming and Toadie Fields and comedians like that, and it's got a very, you know, it takes you back to the era. It's nostalgic. It's dramatic, it's funny, and she is absolutely a standout. And when I saw this show, you know, because when I was thinking of the top 10 list, this wasn't on it. And the minute I saw it, I'm like, I'm putting it on this list. Something's getting bumped, and I got to get this on the list. Brilliant. I love the show, and kudos to the Golden Globes for recognizing this great show, really good show.
So I also watched the show over the weekend. I watched 5 episodes, and I don't know yet if it's on my top 10 list, but I will say, and this is, it's a comedy. It's entered in the comedy category. To me, it's an hour long show, and I really felt that it was more of a drama. It's a very fun, light, entertaining drama, but it, to me, it's not a comedy. It's not like line, 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 joke. So that's sort of how I think about comedies. I know that the definition has changed, but that's my sort of nitpick with it. But having said that, so I didn't think it was, I thought it was very entertaining. I didn't think it was ha-ha funny. It had its moments. But what I love about the show, you're right, Rachel Brosnahan is amazing. And what's crazy about that performance is where anybody has seen her before was in House of Cards. And in House of Cards, she plays this like very abused girl who, I mean, her whole storyline in House of Cards is just her being very desperate. And this performance is night and day. It's nothing similar. You wouldn't even recognize her. So the other part about it that I love is just the way they set the period, that all the apartments are beautiful. The costumes are impeccable. The music is fabulous. That part of it is really great. And then the other part I loved is her relationship with her manager, who is, her name is Susie. She's played by Alex Borstein. And that's actually where I think the show is the funniest, is between those two.
And, you know, it also comes from Amy Sherman-Palladino,
right,
who did Gilmore Girls. And, you know, she has a way of telling stories, you know, very rapid pace, a lot of dialogue. It's quick. And it just fits really well into what she does. And I mean, I see many seasons ahead for this show, hopefully. Really good show.
I will say, though, that, I mean, I've watched a fair amount of Gilmore. I watched Bunheads, which is also Amy Sherman-Palladino. I didn't find this show as sort of unrelentingly talkative as more Gilmore than Bunheads. This show, she can talk a lot, but it's not, I don't know, I just feel like Amy's chilled out a little bit. So in that part I like. There's also some really good supporting performances from Kevin Pollak and Tony Shalhoub and other people who pop up. So it's definitely worth checking out if you have Amazon.
I totally agree with that.
All right, I'm going to skip my number 6 because it's on your list later. Let's go to your number 5.
My number 5 is, hands down, Bates Motel. You know, I've been saying this for the last 5 years. Every top 10 list that I've done has had Bates Motel on it. This show has not gotten the attention it's deserved. You know, people will say, good show, you know, well done, well written. You never see it on a top 10 list. I just think it had a really solid final season. And you know what this show did for me? You know, initially when the show came on, you know, Psycho from Alfred Hitchcock is a top 10 film for me. I've seen that movie, I can't even tell you how many times. And I was always very interested in the character of Norman Bates. You know, what was he like? You know, how did this happen to him? What, you know, what went on? So when the show first came out, I was very interested in it. And from the get-go, from that pilot episode, I just thought it was just well-written, well-done. And I think Freddie Highmore totally captured that character. And Vera Farmiga as the mother, they just were the craziest. Mother and son, they were nuts. And the way they ended the show in the final season, she was already dead, you know, his mother. And he had brought her back to that creepy house. And we really got to understand, you know, everything about him, why he was who he was. And the way the show ended, the fact that he dies and suddenly is with his mother now, I just think really tied all the loose ends. And now when I watch Psycho, and I recently did, it was on and I watched it, there's something very different about Psycho because I'm watching that movie now kind of understanding why Norman Bates was who he was. And I just, you know, thumbs up, 5 great seasons. I thought they did an excellent job, and I really think it didn't get the attention it deserved. Did you watch it? Did you like it?
No, you know, this is one where I'm like, I have not only not seen Psycho, I have seen no episodes of Bates Motel, and this is because I am deeply not a horror person, so I avoid anything like this, so I'm of no help. But I think Vera Farmiga, and maybe Freddie Highmore too, she was definitely nominated at some point along the way.
She was nominated for 1 Emmy. He never got, as far as I know, he never got nominated for anything. But now he's nominated for The Good Doctor. He got a Golden Globe nomination. He just seamlessly transitioned into that, you know. She got an Emmy nomination. She didn't win, but she did get nominated.
All right, I'm going to skip my number five because also it comes up later on your list. So let's go to your number four.
My number four is a show that's really tough to watch. And it's The Handmaid's Tale. And, you know, this just, you know, I think, you know, we've all read, you know, if you haven't seen it, it's just a very creepy, scary tale of, you know, women who are, you know, suddenly breeding. Their goal in life is to, you know, have children. And it's sort of like sex slavery. I guess that's how you describe it. And it's very hard to watch. It's very difficult to watch when she loses her son. He's taken away. And,
daughter.
I meant the daughter, excuse me. But it's very, it's just a very, very painful and hard show to watch. But there's something about it that once you sit down, you really have to stay with it because you want to see what's going to happen. It's dark and it's just really difficult. And I think for Hulu, this is probably the first show that really broke out for them. That was kind of like had that Netflix, you know, it kind of put them in the same league as Netflix, that this was a show that, you know, everybody was honoring and everybody was talking about. And talk about creativity. You have never seen anything like this before. And, you know, I think also, you know, recently for Halloween, I think a lot of costumes out there, people were dressed up as, you know, when those handmade out there.
Yeah.
But what do you think about this show?
Handmaid's was number six on my list. I worry about my empathy because I didn't find it that hard to watch. I did read the book right before. The book is a pretty short read, actually, but I did read the book right before I watched the show. So I feel like I was kind of the show kind of differs from the book somewhat. But in any case, I do think the thing about Handmaid's is, first of all, Elizabeth Moss's performance is superlative. You can't take your eyes off her.
Yes.
And she's very much the core of the whole show. And I probably have mentioned this before, but I did a whole story for Broadcasting and Cable about the Emmys. And I had a long conversation with Warren Littlefield about how they put that show together and how they got Lizzie Moss, as they call her, to star in it. And, you know, it was very specifically created to be an awards vehicle. You know, it was supposed to be very premium, and it was, the goal was to get her an Emmy via the show. So, and I think it's a rare occasion where you kind of set out to be an awards vehicle and you achieve that goal. Because I think lots of things set out to win awards, they don't always succeed.
Yes.
This one really did. I do think it's beautifully shot. And it's interesting because Handmaid's Tale, which won the Emmy, beat three nominated Netflix shows. So just from an odds point of view, it really beat the odds in winning. So I also, one complaint I'd heard about Handmaid's Tale, which I sort of think is strange, is at the end of every episode, the closing song would be some kind of pop song. And people said that threw them out of the tone of the show. I didn't really agree with that. I thought that, and Handmaid's Tale also had what it had going for it. And I had a conversation with Hulu's Craig Erwich about this. The timing was just fortuitous and unfortunate in that, you know, what the political climate is in this country. But, you know, when Handmaid's Tale came out in April and Trump had just won in November, been inaugurated in January, and people were feeling some of that kind of fear, it just, timing wise, fit right into that mood for good or for bad. So it was a very interesting project. What's going to be really interesting with Handmaid's Tale is its second season, because, you know, first season they could really draw from the book. Second season, there's none of that. So that'll be interesting to see where they go, because all of that will become original storytelling.
I'm curious to see what happens. It's, you know, again, it was just one of those shows that to me, it wasn't, you know, you had to be in the mood for it. It's sort of like you really had to have a certain mindset. It's not like me watching a Practical Jokers where I'm just, you know, laughing my head off. It's sort of like you have to be in the mindset, because it's a very serious, difficult drama, I think. And you have to kind of be in the mindset where I'm going to commit to this. And I also think it's another show for me that I don't really I don't know if I'd sit and watch six episodes in a row of it.
I think
after an episode, you have to kind of take a breather and think
absolutely.
About what you just watched, you know?
I would definitely not watch. I think we maybe would watch one or two a night, but that's generally how we watch anyway. But yeah, it's a lot to digest. Like, you don't need to watch six in a row. I did watch Stranger Things like 4 and then 5. Stranger Things was my number 4. All right. Number 3.
My number 3 is Big Little Lies. I think I said
that's
liars,
my number 3
but they
also.
Were liars too. Oh, yeah, that was we agreed on that. Yeah. I, you know, to me, the minute I watched this, I thought to myself, this reminds me of Desperate Housewives. You know, Desperate Housewives was a show I think in that first season was brilliant. It was a brilliant show, and this is very reminiscent of it. You know, it takes place in Monterey. It's a beach town, affluent, beautiful women, beautiful homes. You know, you think everything's perfect and money buys happiness. Well, it does not. And then poof, there's a murder. So you have this, you know, I always think the, a successful show going back to like when you had like Knots Landing and stuff, like when you had a murder happen, or something happened and it kind of took place all season and they were trying to figure it out. And that's what this show did. Although then again, it's not, you don't get 22 episodes. You didn't get that many. But I think the acting was brilliant. You know, we had Nicole Kidman won an Emmy and
Alexander Skarsgård. Laura Dern.
I mean, just brilliant. Reese Witherspoon, I thought, was probably my favorite character on the show. And it was addictive. It was just a really, really good show. And you know, initially the plan was it's a limited series. And obviously the success of Big Little Lies, they decided, let's bring it back. We'll do a second season in 2019. So I guess it's going to all, you know, they're going to have a good storyline to see what they come up with. You know, is it going to be another murder? Is it what's going to happen? But it was Desperate Housewives for me, and it took me back, and I truly enjoyed it.
It's like Desperate Housewives, the very premium edition. But one thing about Big Little Lies, somebody was telling me that where the houses were. So, like, one of the houses was in Topanga Canyon. A couple of them were in Malibu. I don't think any of them were actually in Monterey, which if you've ever been to Monterey, there's no houses on the beach like that. But Monterey's like on a cliff. It doesn't really work like that.
You live on the beach.
Yeah, it's not really set up like that. But no, I loved every minute of Big Little Lies. That was a show I was excited to watch and had high expectations for, and I feel like it totally met them. And that's also a show where you go, this is why these people are movie stars. Like, just there's Laura Dern, Nicole Kidman, Reese Witherspoon. There's a reason why, like, they are on camera. You couldn't really deny it. And I used to think that I did used to kind of laugh off Nicole Kidman for whatever reason, and I really had regained respect for her talent after Big Little Lies. I thought she was so good at it. So yeah, I love that show. And you know, it was a little tiny controversy because it got nominated for Golden Globes as limited series. It won the Emmy as limited series. Then it got renewed. It got renewed after the end of the eligibility period of the Golden Globes. So it's kind of, and they had to renegotiate everybody. And they hadn't initially planned to do a second season, much like True Detective. So it's a tiny little thing, but there was a little bit of complaining about it. But I sort of feel like I really don't care. I'm happy that they're coming back and doing a second season. And even though there's not a second book of Big Little Lies, that author, I think it's Moriarty, or Morty. Anyway, she has tons of literature. She has many books to draw from. And I think she's also involved in helping them create a second season. So I think the same creative auspices are there. So I think the second season will probably... I can't talk today, will probably be equally as good. So I'm really looking forward to it.
Excellent show. Really well done. You know, again, I have to bring back, I have to mention again, Desperate Housewives. I remember watching that show in the first season and thinking, this is the best serialized drama. You know, because I was a big Knots Landing fan, Dallas. I used to like those shows.
Yeah.
And then when it came back in the second season, it was not the same. It never was as good. They never could recapture what they had in the first season.
With shows.
Oh, totally. But I think that's what I got real at some point. I think by the fourth season, I sort of like I didn't want to watch anymore. I'm hoping Big Little Lies will avoid that sophomore slump and give us another, you know, come up with a great storyline that they could take us through another season And I'm real, but it won't be, I think they said 2019, so we're going to have to wait.
Well, they only have to do, you know, 7 or 8 episodes as opposed to 22 or 24. So that makes your life a little easier. And you don't have to come back the next year. Like, you can come back in 2019. So you have a little room to breathe. All right. So speaking of sophomore slumps, let's go into your number two.
You know, I have to tell you, I love This Is Us. I can't say enough good things about it, but there's certain things about it that really bother me. That's not to say that I don't think it's top 10. In fact, when I was doing the list, I thought, is it my top show? Because, I mean, this family, I'm a sucker for family dramas. I like to see people, I just like families, and I like the kind of learning the backstory of various families and their relationships and everything about it. I love this show, but it's also very schmaltzy. I mean, they do things, you know, that they're pulling on your heartstrings, and they're doing, you know, certain things that they want. They want you to, you know, to start bawling, and that's their goal. What I didn't like, and it is, but you know, it's funny. What bothered me this season was, you know, we had very little of William, the character who died in season one. You know, on This Is Us, you could die, and you're still on the show, because they're constantly going back and forth with flashbacks. So we didn't see a lot of him, and I thought he was so integral in season one. And then they brought up a storyline where Sterling K. Brown is Randall, and his wife, you know, they bring in a foster child named Deja. And I didn't find that to be all that interesting. I felt that that was taking away from the regular characters. Regardless, everything about it, I love this family. I worry, though, they're making such a big deal about how Jack died. We talked about this before. Yeah. I just hope that they're going to come up with something that's really going to be satisfying, because if they don't, they run the risk of people saying, oh, I feel ripped off and I'm out of here. But I just I love the music. I love the acting and everything about it. It's just a great show. And it's your number 8, you said?
It's my number 10.
Oh, it's your number 10. Okay.
I'm just very... the schmaltz is getting to me this season. We talked about this a great deal during the Golden Globes episode, so I'm not going to really hammer into this too much. But I do think because they got a 2-season renewal, they're dragging out the story quite a bit. So I think having that renewal can be good for showrunners, because they have time to plan and they know they've got some room. So that can be helpful, but I do feel like it's just dragging out. I get last season, you said when we talked about the Golden Globes that people either love the show or hate the show. And I thought, no, I'm sort of in neither category. I have loved it. I am not currently loving it. I'm going to keep watching it, though. I'm not going to stop watching it. I just need them to like ease their foot off the gas a little bit, but we'll see where it goes. I will definitely watch the post Super Bowl episode. Although I don't know. I don't really want the whole Milo or the whole Jack is dead story that much, but it's, I know
well,
it's
I don't
very
think they needed
to
it, it,
but I'm like, oh, I wish he didn't die actually. But
it well, you know, really when we first learned, well, look, anything can happen on a show. He could suddenly, you know, but when we first learned in season one that Jack, you know, Milo dies, you know, we learned this, right? And I remember thinking, like, why did they do that? Why was that necessary? And then every episode they play up to, you know, that he died, and it, you know, I mean, look, you lose your father, it's a very big deal, obviously.
Yeah.
But they're playing up to this, like, and do you have a personal theory of how he died? Do you think
we know that he had a substance addiction problem. We know the house burned down. So something around that, but you know, to be honest, I haven't applied a lot of thought, because I don't want him to die, which is so stupid, because I mean, we've known that this guy dies, I think, from like episode 2. So it's really silly, but.
Look, when they at the end of that episode, when they showed going to the house and you see that the house burned down, you're like, oh my God, that, you know, Jack died in the fire. And then, you know, Chrissy Metz's Kate said that it was her fault that he died. So what did she do?
Yeah.
So, you know, but it's just, I love the show, and I will keep watching, and I'll probably keep complaining. And I'm gonna
You're complaining way less than I'm complaining.
Everybody complains about it, but you know, it's just, I mean, listen, if you're Kleenex, you should be sponsoring this show. I mean, why don't they have commercials? I mean, I actually tear up a couple of times. I'm not the type that, you know, I just don't. It's just certain scenes, like, oh God. Oh my goodness, hard
See, that's
to take,
another show where I wonder about my empathy, because people are always like, oh, I cry every episode, and I feel like I never cry. And I'm a crier, so I'm like, what is wrong with me? I'm not crying in this show.
See, I'm just the opposite. I'm not a crier, and I'm sitting there like, you know, a tear's dropping. I'm like, what is this? Where did this come from? It's very strange, but I love it. I love it, and I can't wait for it to come back. We only have 9 more episodes. We're halfway done.
Yeah, so, it's in March. Series finale's in March.
Yeah, yeah.
All right, my number two. Okay, so the show that's my number two is not on your list. And I thought about this a lot, and I'm kind of mad at this show, so I have a weird relationship with it. But I ultimately was like, considering how much I'm actually obsessed with it, it was not reasonable to not put it on my list. So the show is Game of Thrones, which I've said this before. I just felt very frustrated by the shortened season. I just felt like they were giving the story short shrift and they were moving everybody around way too fast. And I think part of the problem is that I love the show so much. I don't want it to end and I want all the episodes. So I'm just kind of mad about it. But so having said all that, I'm like, considering how much I look forward to seeing that show every week, how much time I spend listening to Game of Thrones podcasts, how much I read about it, it's just not reasonable for me to not put the show on my own list. It's right. Probably my biggest television obsession. I'm totally completely into it. And I mean, on the beyond my own being tied into the story, I think you just cannot argue with the spectacle of Game of Thrones and the huge set pieces. And I mean, what they're doing on screen, there's just nothing else on TV that even comes close to the epicness of Game of Thrones.
You know, I recognize the brilliance of Game of Thrones and I, you know, everything about it. I never have been addicted to it. I mean, I've watched it. I don't, you know, I like it. It's not one of my favorite shows. And it's interesting when you do a top 10 list, you have to think to yourself, is it based on your favorite shows or is it based on everything about the show that would qualify it
yeah.
to be mentioned, even though you don't love it as much. And it was interesting when I put on Impractical Jokers, I, you know, obviously, you know, from a production and everything else, it doesn't qualify, but I just said, I enjoy it so much. I'm putting it on, but the Game of Thrones for me would be top 20. It would be in my top 20, but, and I like it, but it's never been an addiction for whatever reason. I never got, I mean, I recognize the value of it. I just, you know, for me, it never was must see.
But I think that, like you feeling like it's never been an addiction, I think that's why you haven't seen that many shows like Game of Thrones on the air, because I think it's people have felt like it's niche, it's fantasy, you know, that's a specific group. And I think that the success of Game of Thrones has ended up blowing that preconception pretty wide open. But I still think it's a genre you're either into or you're not. So I understand why people aren't that into it. But
right.
I agree, though. I mean, I tried to do my list initially on that, like, critical, how do I view it as a production? And then I just decided I don't have the scope to do this correctly. So I'm just going to do it according to my own personal, what I thought my own top 10 was. All right, Mark, dun-da-da, number one.
Dun-da-da, number one is, to me, the Deuce.
I feel completely responsible for this pick.
You are. We talked about this. You got me. You know, and somebody this morning on Facebook wrote me a message, something to the effect that he felt that it was too graphic. We saw
it's really
too much
graphic.
Of Maggie Gyllenhaal. It is very graphic, but here's the deal. You're dealing with 42nd Street, 1971. And I've told people this, and I have to qualify this. At that time, I was a very young kid. And I remember going into the city. And I remember seeing 42nd Street. And if I was with my mother, she'd say, don't you dare. You shut your eyes and walk to the next street.
Yeah.
And then when
yeah.
I got a little older, I'm like, I'm going back there. I want to see what's going on. And the way they recreated that environment. But that's what the environment was. I mean, what you see is what you get. It was like that. It was just, you know, and when you watch that show, at least for me, I kind of feel like I'm on the street walking. I smell the filth. The garbage, I see the prostitutes, I see the police, so I see all of it. And what I love about the show, more than anything else, is, you know, we get to see, you know, the pimps and the prostitutes and all of that, But you're seeing backstories. You're learning about, you know, Maggie Gyllenhaal's character, and her real name is Eileen, and she has a son, and her mother's embarrassed. And, you know, there's so much more to it. Like, why did these women get to this place? And what is it that they're looking, you know, what is their future? I mean, she has aspirations. She's interested in filmmaking. And I just think, you know, and James Franco playing a dual role, I just think it's an excellent show. Another example of why HBO is just a primary outlet for this type of storytelling. And again, it's not a show that, you know, you kind of have to be in the mood for it, you know, and it just takes you back, and it's so well done, everything about it. That's my favorite, my best.
Wow, your best.
What about you?
This was number five on my list, actually. Again, my top five are probably pretty close in terms of how much I enjoyed all of them. But so I think you're right. I don't think The Deuce would have worked really on any other network. And, you know, they've done, David Simon's done his last three projects, The Wire, Tremé, and The Deuce on HBO. I don't know how much HBO I would think that they probably don't give him too many notes. But I will say, I feel like Tremé, I didn't really get into. The Wire, obviously, I loved it. I feel like anyone who's watched it loved it. I actually think The Deuce might be better than The Wire, just because I think it's tighter. I think it's, there's just no misplaced scene. There's no fat on that show at all. It's all very, it's just really well-told story. It's another show where they create that period incredibly. I think I've said this before too. I'm not really a Franco fan, but this was a show where I was really like, oh, I understand why James Franco gets all these roles and does all these things. And it's interesting because he's got The Disaster Artist out, which is getting a lot of good reviews. So yeah, I think you're right though, that The Deuce is probably not for everyone. It is incredibly graphic. So I would warn anybody that be ready if you're going to watch it. But I mean, it has some of the best performances and really great writing too.
And I have to tell you, inadvertently, it gave me the biggest laugh of the season.
I know, it is funny.
There was one scene where I'm just thinking about it, makes me laugh. I'm laughing thinking about it. There was a scene when, the character's name escapes me, but it was the twins, you know, James Franco was playing the two characters.
Yeah, it's Frankie and Vinny, I think.
And Vinny, right. And then when I guess the mobster, whoever, is talking about opening up a new business for them, and he meets them, and then he says, and, you know, we'll leave out the F-bomb here, but what is this, the Patty Duke show? You know, and I just thought that was so funny. They're thinking of Patty and Kathy Lane in Brooklyn Heights. But I can't get enough of The Deuce. I can't wait for it to come back.
There were moments, when I was watching that show, you'll have both Francos in the scene. And so I will say that took me out of it a little, because I'd really be like, how did they shoot this? And I'd be thinking about that.
Right.
where did they put the name Franco? And I spent time thinking about that.
And then the only other thing I'll say about it, the one thing that really, really was so sad. If you haven't seen I think it was episode 7 it happened, and you may want to kind of like walk away for a minute, but when Thunder Thighs fell out of the window and, you know, just obviously splattered and, you know, she's dead. I mean, to me, it was so sad to think that these women were treated as as meat, you know, but these were people. They were real people. They had feelings. They had desires. They had ambitions. And just the way that, you know, she met her ending. And people just, she was laying on the floor and, you know, it didn't matter. It was sad. It was hard. It was sad to see. Very sad to see.
I think that was true. But then I also think that piece of it, and you also see, there's a couple other scenes where some of the prostitutes get beat up, including Maggie Gyllenhaal's character.
Yeah.
And so you do see it from both those points of view. And in a way, I feel like the Thunder Thighs storyline needed to happen so you understood what the risk was.
Yeah, that's true. I agree.
You know,
with that.
It really brought home to you that there was risk to this job. And I mean, you had already seen it with something that happens with Maggie Gyllenhaal's character, but that really brought home, you know, every night they went out and it was risky.
It was risky. It was, you know, listen, you know, that's wasn't an easy life there. But again, the way they recreated that environment and what it looked like, and I just it's just absolutely flawless. And I don't know when exactly it's coming back, but I can't wait for that second season.
Yeah, it's quite good. All right, my number one is on your honorable mention list. So my number one is The Crown. I think this is because I literally just finished watching it, but I could not get enough of that show. It's just, it's so beautiful. It's so, I mean, all that, it's so English, and all those castles and the incredible costumes and the incredible, there's just jewelry, there's art, there's drama, there's, I mean, it's just fabulous. I love that show so much.
Oh, that's a great show. That's also another, you know, that was, you know, for me, I had, you know, honorable mention, as you said, if I had a top 15, it would have been in the top 15, but, excellent shows. It's just so, what's the word, classy. And, you know, it's just so well done. And again, another example of why Netflix is so important in terms of quality content. This, you know, they have so much.
They're so willing to spend. I mean, I can't. I feel like, I think we've read, right, that show is $100 million in a season or something. I mean, it feels like it.
It just, it has that aura of, what's the word, grandeur, I guess. Is that a word? Yeah.
Yeah, I feel like, did they kick the royals out of their castles so they could shoot in them? I mean, the way they recreate all those castles, yeah, and all the art in them is incredible.
I'm with you on all of that.
Yeah, and then I would be remiss if I don't mention the performances in The Crown, which are all stellar. It's Claire Foy as Queen Elizabeth. She, I believe, won the Golden Globe last year, is nominated again this year. Matt Smith is Prince Philip, and he gets some great episodes this season, really focusing in on that character. Vanessa Kirby as Princess Margaret, who I think is spectacular. She's one of those actresses, I haven't seen her before, but you kind of can't take your eyes off her. And then a great turn by Matthew Good, who people would know from Downton Abbey. And he plays Anthony Jones, who ends up marrying Princess Margaret. So it's The Crown is a great watch. And then an interesting thing, Nielsen does these SVOD ratings. And it's not, I don't think it's not like network ratings where they're really precise, but they did have some interesting demographic information about The Crown, which, as you would expect, it appeals to an older audience. It appeals to a relatively wealthy audience, 100,000 median household income kind of demographic. But I thought that was just interesting that Nielsen put that out about The Crown.
Excellent show. Really good show. And there was a lot, you know what? This was a hard task this year. There was a lot of good shows, you know, many good shows. And one, my personal favorite show, probably of anything, which I didn't put in my top 10, I had an honorable mention, was Survivor. This is a show that I've been watching religiously for 17 years. The minute it starts, I'm addicted to the season. But I figured at this point, look, 17 years later.
Yeah, we know what it is.
We'll stick in an honorable mention. We need to have room for the kind of newer shows, but some shows just last forever.
So go through the rest of your honorable mentions.
My other honorable mentions are, let me go down here, The Affair on Showtime.
So I was shocked that you had The Affair on there. The Affair, I loved it in season one. And then season two, I was like, huh. And then I tapped out on season three. And that's a show where I'm like, it's The Affair. The affair was had. Now the show should be over.
Yeah, but you know what it tells me about The Affair? You know, yes, season one was the best season. Season two, it got a little crazy in season three, but, you know, the character, he lost everything, basically. And, you know, the woman that he left his wife for, they split up. He didn't even stay with her. And then basically he had nothing. And it was sort of like, I'm starting from scratch. And it got very crazy. And then I thought to myself, does it even qualify? Because it started really in 2016, but then it ended last January. And it's coming back in January for the fourth season, which I imagine will be its last season. But I just think The Affair kind of, you know, it kind of gives you a warning. This is what could happen to you.
Yeah, don't have an affair.
If you have an affair. So
it's Dominic West, who, if talk back to my comment about The Wire, I think he's a great actor. I love him. I will say, though, through the course of the two seasons I watched, I hated him. I mean, I love that actor, but I hated that character. And I think that's why I started to be like, I'm not watching this. I'm not invested. I can't deal with his behavior. I'm out.
Well, talk about cringeworthy. There was a scene where he's in a hot tub and fooling around, and then his daughter's in there. I'm like,
oh,
oh
I
my
think
God,
I saw
get
that. That was in
ah.
season two. That was horrendous. That might have been
Oh,
when
that
I
was
was like,
season
I have to
two.
go. Goodbye.
Oh, that was season two. Okay,
I think
right. And
so.
they never really addressed that because I mean, if listen, if that was, oh my God, I don't want to think about it.
Yeah,
but that was
absolutely.
Really hard to take. So that was my first. That was my first honorable mention. Then The Crown, as we talked about. Glow on Netflix. Do you watch that?
No, Glow
Have
is
you
on
seen
my
it?
List on shows I want to go back and watch.
You know what I love about Glow is I am a big fan of wrestling. When I remember, you know, growing up in the era of the Deuce, you know, back then, I remember watching wrestling on Saturday nights. I was very into it, and then you know I got invested in you know these female wrestlers, and you know just watching kind of like the backstory of this and the comedy in this, and how you can't take it seriously. You know, this woman's an actress, Alison Brie, and suddenly she's a wrestler, a female wrestler.
She just
and
seems too small to me to be a wrestler. She's like a tiny little thing, and then she's supposed to be this
I know.
Wrestler. Like, I don't know
I
if
know,
I'm
but
buying.
You know what? No, I agree with that. So the whole thing is a farce, and it's silly, but it's funny. And you have to, you know, you have to, I mean, wrestling's not real.
Right.
And, you know, you have to take it with a grain of salt. But I put The Good Doctor in my list simply because I think Freddie Highmore's still
yeah.
good in that. And to go from, you know, Norman Bates, as we talked about, into this. And, you know, the next show that I have, which no one's ever, ever included on their list, is The Middle. And let me tell you, I'll be honest with you, if I didn't see Marvelous Mrs. Maisel, I might have had The Middle in the top 10 because this is a show, 9 seasons on the air. It was sort of like way back when the Bob Newhart show got lost in the Mary Tyler Moore hoopla. You know, Modern Family got all the attention, but this is, I thought, well-written, well-acted, and a loving family that it just struck a chord. And I think this final season is really good. They're, you know, they're kind of tying the various loose ends, and I just love this show. Superior Donuts on CBS, a great show. It's comedy, but it also talks about social issues. It's a little silly that everyone's in this donut shop hanging out, but in some ways it's like Cheers. In some ways it's like Cheers. I mean, you know, Katie Sagal is always sitting in the donut shop, but okay, her friends are there, and it feels comfortable. Superstore at NBC. I think it's an excellent show. It's The Office set in a department store. And, you know, same kind of characters, well done, well written, well acted. And then again, Survivor, simply because in 17 years, I never missed an episode.
Wow. That's dedication.
Never. That
All
is
right.
dedication. I never miss. Well, what are your honorable favorites?
I don't really have honorable mentions, so I'm going to skip mine. But I do have a really long list of shows I would like to watch. So I'm just going to list them. I'm not going to get into it too much. But, American Gods on Stars, that was another one, much like Feud, where I had every intention of watching it. I was excited about it. I read American Gods ahead of time, and then it came on, and I never watched it. So that one I might like to go back and check out. Glow is on my list. I've heard great things about Godless on Netflix, which is a Western about a town that women end up running. Feud is on my list. I've heard really good things about both Ozark and Mindhunter, also on Netflix.
Mm-hmm.
NBC's The Good Place. That one, I mean, that's like on every list. And I've watched like one episode, but I'd really like to go back and check it out. And I think Mike Schur, who's the showrunner, his shows are always great. And then I have some other things I'd like to, like Master of None, I watched season one. I haven't watched season two. Grace and Pinky, I watched season one. And I loved it. I never went back. So I have quite a bit to catch up on. And then that takes me into my another section of the list, which is shows I miss, but I don't really intend to go watch. So The Leftovers, Leftovers is number one on many people's lists. And I had it on my shows I regret missing, and I will go back and watch. The Leftovers, though, that's another one where I read the book, I watched season one, and I honestly was like, I hate season one. It was not an enjoyable watch. I think I watched episode one of season two, and then I just never went back. And people they just rave about that show. And I just don't know that I can get myself to go back and watch it. It's very depressing and I sort of can't handle it. Have you watched Leftovers?
Mm-hmm. I've seen, you know, again, this is a show that I've seen. I'm not addicted to. I recognize why it's, you know, why everybody includes it on their list. Again, not a simple show, not something that you're going to just sit down and, you know, you have to be prepared for this because it's hard to really understand. I don't really know what the sudden departure is. I don't really get it. And it's sort of like, in a way, when you watch Lost way back when on ABC, and it was sort of like, what the hell is going on here? I don't get this. But so this is a show that if I committed to it, if I committed to it, which I probably should and will at some point, I think I would really love it. But I didn't put it on my list, again, because I'm not that invested in it. So I didn't feel qualified to, you know, include that. I wanted to make sure I included things that I was really invested in. So I'm not invested yet, but I might be eventually.
Yeah, I might go back and check it out. I will say that I rode hard for Lost. I loved it. I was like reading all the blogs and everything about it. So, and it's from Damon Lindelof, The Leftovers is. So in a way, I kind of like that storytelling. So I might go back. That's a maybe show. But what shows are, I mean, you get really, you have these lists of shows you want to go back and watch, but you get past all these new shows come out and you have to go watch them. But do you have any shows that you'd like to kind of go catch up on over this upcoming break?
I think, what would I like to catch up with? Not that I want to catch up with it. It hasn't come out. It hasn't returned yet. But once The Affair comes back, that's really the show that I'm looking forward to the most. I mean, I'm really, really interested in that. You mentioned a show that I really need to sit down and watch, The Good Place.
Yeah.
I have seen a couple of episodes of it, and I just don't understand the hoopla about this show. I don't get it. I understand what it's about. I don't understand why it's on everybody's top 10 list. So I think that that's a show that I really need to sit down and watch and kind of invest myself in it to understand if I think it's as good as everybody else thinks. And, you know,
right,
one of the things I was, you know, I don't get it, Dee, but you said you only saw one episode.
I've only seen one, but I was going to say, that's our assignment, Mark. We're both going to watch The Good Place.
We'll watch The Good Place. You know, another show that I'd love to start watching again, and I really kind of lost track with it, I'd like to sit down and watch The Goldbergs again. I'd like to watch it again because that's a show that I really could relate to. In some ways, I have a hard time watching it. I think, what's his name, is the father. He's a little hard to take. But,
Garland?
You know what? Oh, yes, Jeff Garland. Yeah. A little hard to take with him calling the kids morons every 5 minutes, but in every scene, actually. But I think I want to sit down and watch that again. So I would say I'd like to get back invested in that. And you know what show I miss, by the way? I miss Undercover Boss. Did you watch that
no.
show?
No. I'm not a big reality person.
Oh, I love reality. And that always gets to me at the end of the episode. I always sit and watch that. Actually, talk about tearing up. That and This Is Us gets to me. Undercover Boss and This Is Us. So it's going to be a good, we had a very good 2017, I think. I think it was a really good year. I'm hoping that we have the similar year. And
a
I hope we
for
have
TV.
Less shows.
Not so much for many other things, but a good year for TV.
It was a great year for TV, but I'm hoping that the peak TV is peaked out because there's really a lot to watch.
Yeah, it needs to slow down a little bit. I agree.
So
all right.
Let's hope that the pendulum shifts downward.
Yeah, a little bit. I peak TV on the downward swing. All right, I'm going to wrap it up there. But so your assignment is to watch The Good Place. That's my assignment as well.
Okay.
But I'll talk to you. Have a great holiday season, Mark, and a happy new year.
You too, Paige. Thank you very much.
All right. Thanks, Mark.
Take care.
Bye.
Bye.
Paige Alpiniak is editorial director of Promax BDA. LaFern Cusack is executive producer of the Daily Brief podcast and senior producer at Promax BDA. Video helper provides the music. Digital producer Kate LaCaire-Marion and social media coordinator Kristen Craik contribute to Daily Brief. Follow Paige on Twitter at Paige A. Follow LaFern at LaFern Cusack and follow Promax BDA at Promax BDA. You can reach out to us at dailybrief@promaxbda.org. And you can subscribe to the Daily Brief podcast on iTunes, Google Play, Podomatic, and now on Spotify. Thanks for listening.